You may wonder how it is the two might go together.
Once there was a controversy. Some devotees were saying that in the Guru-Bhaktic way of Nikunjaya-Narati-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-Kedri-K tasteful arrangements for Radha and Krishna. So, some devotees say, you know, this refers to those who are distributing books. Others said, no, how could you say that thing? If you involve in verse, how could you apply it in that way? So, when Prabhupada heard the controversies of his truth, because Radharani knew that his devotees engaged others in the Christian service. None of us think that we are. I'm not a fat boy, never mind. I'm not a fat boy. There is actually what is going on, although we have no qualification. So, where are you going to hear from Nectar Devotion, which is Srila Prabhupada's summary study of Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita the Sindhu. This chapter is from the end part of Nectar Devotion. Prabhupada's instructions are that you read Nectar Devotion, and even though the second half of the book may be difficult for you to understand, all about rasas and things like that, you just feel it and read it, and gradually, after repeated reading and rendering devotional service,
it'll become more clear.
It is the most difficult subject now, rasas, because
rasas are present in the material world,
but in a perverted way. So as soon as we may hear about Krishna, all spiritual rasas, we think, I know what that's all about. And then we blow it at that point. So, it's so far my instructions on you just
hear.
The sound vibration will purify you, and gradually you will all start to make sense. So this is chapter 44, devotional service and conjugal love. When you hear that word, conjugal love, those two words, well, just forget about anything you know. And you'll be safe. It's got nothing to do with material bodies. It's got nothing to do with the biological affairs of temporary material bodies full of blood and fat and bones and all sorts of other things. Now, Krishna and Krishna's affairs have nothing to do with the material body. They are the purest of pure. There's no question of any kind of material exchange, no question of material lust or passion. Krishna's body is not composed of matter, and Krishna's associates, their bodies are not composed of matter. There's no question of contamination in the three modes of material nature. So therefore, you have to just listen without speculation. And it is difficult, especially when you hear that word conjugal immediately. Light goes off in the brain, oh yes. But when that happens, you just say, oh no. This is just a short chapter, and it's short on purpose. Because it's a very difficult subject to understand. A pure devotee's attraction to Krishna in conjugal love is called devotional service in conjugal love. Although such conjugal feelings are not at all material, there is some similarity between this spiritual love and material activities. Therefore, persons who are interested only in material activities are unable to understand this spiritual conjugal love. And these devotional reciprocations appear very mysterious to them. Rupa Goswami therefore describes conjugal love very briefly. The impetuses of conjugal love are Krishna and his very dear consorts, such as Radharani and her immediate associates. Lord Krishna has no rival. No one is equal to him, and no one is greater than him. His beauty is also without any rival. And because he excels all others in the pastimes of conjugal love, he is the original object of all conjugal love. In the Gita Govinda by Jayadev Goswami, Gita Govinda, for devotees on the highest platform, tree. There's certain books like that, Gita Govinda, Krishna Kanamrita, Govinda Kanamrita. We'll discuss more about that tomorrow morning. We'll read a chapter from Chaitanya Charitamrita tomorrow morning. And it'll have verses from these very most advanced books, which are not recommended to be read because they are simply books discussed by liberated souls. Although, unfortunately, this is what the university professor at Nisei High is yelling into. They think, oh, yes, we can understand all this. When actually it's the thing they can least understand. In the Gita Govinda by Jayadev Goswami, one gopi tells her friend, Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure within this universe. His body is as soft as the lotus flower, and his free behavior with the gopis, which appears exactly like a young boy's attraction to a young girl, is a subject matter of transcendental conjugal love. A pure devotee follows in the footsteps of a gopi and worships the gopis as follows. Let me offer my respectful obeisances to all the young cowherd girls whose bodily features are so attractive. Simply by their beautiful, attractive features, they are worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Out of all the young gopis, Srimati Radharani is the most prominent. The beauty of Srimati Radharani is described as follows. Her eyes defeat the attractive features of the eyes of the Chakori bird. When one sees the face of Radharani, he immediately hates the beauty of the moon. Her bodily complexion defeats the beauty of gold. Thus, let us all look upon the transcendental beauty of Srimati Radharani. Krishna's attraction for Radharani is described by Krishna himself thus. When I create some joking phrases in order to enjoy the beauty of Radharani, Radharani hears these joking words with great attention. But by her bodily features and counter words, she neglects me. And I even possess unlimited pleasure by her neglect of me, for she becomes so beautiful that she increases my pleasure 100 times. A similar statement can be found in Gita Govinda, wherein it is said that when the enemy of Hamsa, Sri Krishna, embraces Srimati Radharani, he immediately becomes entangled in a loving condition and gives up the company of all other gopis. In the Padyavali of Rupa Goswami, another book you'll find quoted often in Chaitanya Charitamrita, several works by Rupa Goswami, Padyavali, Vidagda Madhava, Lalit Madhava, besides what we were talking about earlier, Gita Govinda, Krishna Kanamrita. In the Padyavali of Rupa Goswami, it is stated that when the gopis hear the sound of Krishna's flute, they immediately forget all rebukes offered by the elderly members of their families. They forget their defamation and the harsh behavior of their husbands. Their only thought is to go out in search of Krishna. When the gopis meet Krishna, the display of their exchanging glances, as well as their joking and laughing behavior, is called anubhava, or sub-ecstasy in conjugal love. In the Lalita Madhava, Rupa Goswami explained that the movements of Krishna's eyebrows are just like the Yamuna, and that the smiling of Radharani is just like the moonshine.
When the Yamuna and the Moonshine come in contact on the bank of the river, the water tastes just like nectar, and drinking it gives great satisfaction. It is as cooling as piles of snow. Similarly, in the Pajavali, one constant companion of Radharani says, "My dear moon-faced Radharani, your whole body appears very content, yet there are signs of tears in your eyes. Your speech is faltering, and your chest is also heaving. By all these signs, I can understand that you must have heard the blowing of Krishna's flute, and as a result of this, your heart is now melting." In the same Pajavali, there is the following description, which is taken as a sign of frustration in conjugal love. Srimati Radharani said, "Dear Mr. Cupid, please do not excite me by throwing your arrows at my body. Dear Mr. Air, please do not arouse me with the fragrance of flowers. I am now bereft of Krishna's loving attitude. And so, under the circumstances, what is the use of my sustaining this useless body? There is no need for such a body by any living entity." This is a sign of frustration and ecstatic love for Krishna. You see, this is what you understand by reading Nectar Devotion. You see that the real world of emotions is the spiritual world. What we know about emotions and emotional exchanges is just such a distorted, perverted thing. But until we hear Nectar Devotion, we have little idea of that. We think our little emotional world is so important, all our mental flavors, and we try so hard to squeeze pleasure out of our relationships. Relationships means exchange, but what we're exchanging in material relationships is just like the rind of an orange, dried up rind of an orange. And the actual nectar is not there. So we cling so tightly to this world of material actions and reactions, trying to get some kind of satisfying exchange with other entities. And when human affairs are at their peak, when they actually think that they're having a successful relationship, they just memorize the expressions of the other person, the nuances, the flavors. That's supposed to be when love is at its peak. Quickly it goes downhill. Quickly becomes stale. And then you lament. What happened to all those wonderful things you did, the way you did the things you did? What happened to the sparkling? So we hold this material world to be so important with its temporary affairs. But upon hearing about Krishna's affairs, we get put in our place, and therefore we can remain detached from material life when we hear about Krishna. Similarly, in Dhanakali Omri, Dhanakali refers to pastimes of Radharani bringing milk to the Jamuna River, and she has to pay a boatman to cross over the Jamuna River. And Krishna obstructs her way. So that is the Dhanakali Lila. In Dhanakali Omri, Srimati Radharani, pointing to Krishna, says, "This clever boy of the forest has the beauty of a bluish lotus flower, and he can attract all the young girls of the universe. Now, after giving me a taste of his transcendental body, he has enthused me, and it is more than I can tolerate. I am now feeling like a female elephant who has been enthused by a male elephant." This is an instance of jubilation and ecstatic love with Krishna. You have to understand that in the spiritual world, there's nothing like no procreation, no pregnancy, no that stuff. The steady ecstasy of conjugal love is the original cause of bodily enjoyment. In the Vidyavali, this original cause of union is described when Radharani tells one of her constant companions, "My dear friend, who is this boy whose eyelids, dancing constantly, have increased the beauty of his face and attracted my desire for conjugal love? His ears are decorated with buds of Ashoka flowers, and he has dressed himself in yellow robes. By the sound of his flute, this boy has already made me impatient." The conjugal love of Radha Krishna is never disturbed by any personal consideration. The undisturbed nature of the conjugal love between Radha and Krishna is described thus. Just a little distance away from Krishna was Mother Yasoda, and Krishna was surrounded by all of his friends. You're getting a very nice scene here. It's full of very dynamic things, so just try to picture this. Just a little distance away from Krishna was Mother Yasoda. So think about that. And Krishna was surrounded by all of his friends. So that's the second thing you think about. In front of his eyes was Chandravali. That's the third thing you think about. Chandravali, that's Radharani's rival. And at the same time, on a chunk of stone in front of the entrance to Vraja, stood the demon known as Vrishasura. So that's the fourth thing. But even in such circumstances, when Krishna saw Radharani standing just behind a bush of many creepers, immediately his beautiful eyebrows moved just like lightning toward her. They got all those things there. Mother Yasoda is there, Krishna surrounded by his friend, Chandravali is there, on a chunk of stone is standing the demon of Vrishasura. Nevertheless, Krishna's eyes move like lightning toward Srinathurada. Another incident is described as follows. On one side of the courtyard, the dead body of Sankhasura was lying, surrounded by many jackals. On another side were many learned brahmanas, who were all self-controlled. They were offering nice prayers, which were as soothing as the cool breeze in summer. In front of Krishna, Lord Baladeva was standing, causing a cooling effect. But even amid all these different circumstances of soothing and disturbing effects, the lotus flower of ecstatic conjugal love that Krishna felt for Radharani could not wither. Perhaps in the beginning you're not able to appreciate the artistry of these scenes that Rupa Goswami is conveying. Perhaps you do not understand the extraordinary transcendental emotions tied up with each one of these factors he's mentioning. On the one side of the courtyard, the dead body of Sankhasura was lying, surrounded by many jackals. So that produces one kind of emotion. On the other side were many learned brahmanas, who were all self-controlled, offering nice prayers. And in front of Krishna is Lord Balaram. But amid all these different circumstances of soothing and disturbing effects, Krishna's attention was still on Srimati Radharani. This love of Krishna for Radharani is often compared to a blooming lotus. The only difference is that Krishna's love remains ever increasingly beautiful. Conjugal love is divided into two portions, Vipralamba, or conjugal love in separation, and Sambhoga, or conjugal love in direct contact. Vipralamba, separation, has three divisions, three subdivisions, known as Purvarag, or preliminary attraction, Mana, or seeming anger, and Pravasa, or separation by distance. When the lover and the beloved have a distinct feeling of not meeting each other, that stage is called Purvarag, or preliminary attraction. In Pajavali, Radharani told her companion, "My dear friend, I was just going to the bank of the Yamuna, and all of a sudden a very nice boy, whose complexion is like a dark blue cloud, became visible in front of my eyes. He glanced over me in a way that I cannot describe. But since this has occurred, I'm sorry that I can no longer engage my mind in the duties of my household affairs. This is an instance of preliminary attraction for Krishna. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 53rd chapter, verse 2, Krishna told the messenger Brahmana, who came from Rukmini, "My dear Brahmana, just like Rukmini, I cannot sleep at night, and my mind is always fixed on her. I know that her brother Rukmi is against me, and that due to his persuasion, my marriage with her has been canceled." This is the whole instance of preliminary attraction. So Krishna, he has his married affairs, that is with the queens of Dwarka, and the chief queen is Rukmini, and then he has his affairs in Vrindavan, which are special because externally the gopis, they're all married as young girls. Of course, everything is Krishna's property, but just to make the pastime super exciting, it goes on in that way. But fools who read this think, "Oh, this Krishna, the Hindu love god who dances with other wives in the middle of the night." They have no understanding of Krishna. Otherwise, they would not say like that. On the other hand, Prabhupada points out that demons, they like to vilify Krishna to give the devotees pain. They think it gives them pleasure to put Krishna down because they know if I say this, the devotees will be very pained. As far as mana, or anger, is concerned, there is the following incident described in Gita Govinda. When Srimati Radharani saw Krishna enjoying himself in the company of several other gopis, she became a little jealous because her special prestige was being dimmed. Therefore, she immediately left the scene and took shelter in a nice flower bush where the black drones were humming. Then, hiding herself behind the creepers, she began to express her sorrow to one of her consorts. This is an instance of seeming disagreement. An example of pravasa, or being out of contact because of living in a distant place, is given in the Pajavali as follows. Since the auspicious day when Krishna left for Mathura, Srimati Radharani has been pressing her head on one of her hands and constantly shedding tears. Her face is always wet now, and therefore there is no chance of her sleeping even for a moment. When the face becomes wet, the sleeping tendency is immediately removed. So when Radharani was always weeping for Krishna because of the separation, there was no chance of her getting any sleep for herself. In the Pallad Samhita, Uddhava says, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, pain-stricken due to being pierced by the arrows of Cupid, is always thinking of you, the gopis, and he is not even accepting his regular lunch, nor is he getting any proper rest." When the lover and beloved come together and enjoy one another by direct contact, this stage is called Sambhoga. There is a statement in Pajavali as follows. Krishna embraced Srimati Radharani in such an expert manner that he appeared to be celebrating the dancing ceremony of the peacock. Sri Rupa Goswami thus ends the fifth wave of his ocean of the nectar of devotion. He offers his respectful obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appeared as Gopal, the eternal form of the Lord. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta summary study of the third division of Bhakti Goswami to Sindhu, in the matter of the five primary relationships with Krishna. Any questions? We don't require to ask questions about this part of nectar devotion. Best to just listen. Read it again and again. Now Lord Caitanya comes to taste the position of Srimati Radharani, and simultaneously he distributes the Yuga Dharma. He distributes love and Godhead. So we'll just hear some interesting accounts from the Sankirtan distributors, how Lord Chaitanya's ocean of love of God is being distributed in New Zealand. Generally we find that unless we hear these things, we can't believe they're going on. This is one from Bhakta Tim. I was doing the street in Henderson and I noticed an elderly man leaving the shopping complex. I approached the man and had a friendly exchange with him. He revealed he was about 72 years old and he was having a realization that death was not so far away. He told me he was renouncing some of his material possessions. He had read many books in his life and he had also read some of Prabhupada's books. The conversation came to what happens at the time of death. I opened the quest for enlightenment and showed him the picture of a Janil soul being snatched away from the body by the Yamadutas. And I relayed the whole story behind it. Ajamila calling for his son Narayan. The elderly man stood looking at the picture for a long time, taken aback by it. Then he told me that he once used to be a psychiatric nurse. One day an old man under his care was blaspheming some Christians who were passing out some pamphlets and Bibles in his ward. "No, I don't need any of that rubbish stuff. Once you're dead, that's it. It's all over. It's just like pulling the plug out of the sink. You're finished." Very soon after that, this man had a heart attack one day, causing him to almost die. The gentleman who I was talking to explained that he and some other nurses and a doctor gathered around the bed of the man. The heart attack victim, upon regaining his consciousness, suddenly grabbed the arm of the doctor and said, "Where am I? What's going on?" The nurses assured him that, "Okay, you had a heart attack, but you made your way through it." So then the heart attack man said, "They were coming to get me. They were coming to get me. They had tied me up and they were all hairy and smelly. They were taking me away. I prayed to God to give me another chance and then I came back to life here." So, are the young leaders just mythological? This is one from Austin Amate, who sometimes takes her 3-year-old son on the back of town. Sukadeva and I were distributing shop to shop. Sukadeva is a little boy. When I noticed two ladies, Sukadeva had a stack of small books and one Bhagavad Gita, which he insisted on carrying. The lady we asked was from up north somewhere and said she didn't have that much money, but she wanted a small book from Sukadeva's pile. While she was looking at a perfection of yoga, Sukadeva, remember he's 3 years old, said, "Here, read this," and added a Bhagavad Gita to her set. "Okay," she replied, and immediately reached for her money. Sukadeva was pleased that he endeavored to carry the heavier book, the Bhagavad Gita, and he had sold it. I was delivering some books for carriage when somehow an address got a little confused. She told me to look for Jonathan Fitzgerald in the AFB Bank. I went to the AFB Bank and I simply asked for Jonathan. They showed me his desk. I sat down and presented myself as the friend of Kelly, the nun. I told him I was just bringing the book he had ordered. He looked at me completely baffled. He had never seen the Bhagavad Gita in his life. Nor had he ever seen Kerry before. Bewildered, I kept the name in my notebook. Jonathan Fitzgerald, AFC Bank, phone number such and such. Then I realized I had gone to the AFC Bank in the wrong town. Still, there was a bank officer named Jonathan at the wrong bank. And he was sitting there right in front of me. Seizing the moment, I said, "Wow, this is such a coincidence. Things like this just don't happen every day. I think that this is really meant to be. This book is very special, so it's coming to your life for a reason." The wrong Jonathan had started looking through the Bhagavad Gita, asking a few questions. He said, "Actually, this is just what I've been wanting, something like this." He gave me a donation and purchased the hardback Bhagavad Gita. He said, "I can't wait to tell my friends about this." So I was amused at the bizarre way Krishna had used me. This one from Terry, out of Srimad Bhagavatam, said, "I was coming out of Woolworth, and I saw an Indian man reading a book. So I stopped to ask him what he was reading. It was a Ramayana. We talked for a little while, and I asked him if he had read Srimad Bhagavatam. He said no, but if we had any Hindi books, he would like to see them. A week later, after I got hold of a Hindi Srimad Bhagavatam set, I ran in to make an appointment. On arriving at his house, I unpacked the books. He started reading part of the first canto. Then I started telling him about Srila Vyasadeva being the very incarnation and how Sukadeva Goswami recited the Srimad Bhagavatam by Maharaj Pritchett and many exalted saints and sages. His ears picked up when I mentioned Sukadeva Goswami. He said he has a very condensed Srimad Bhagavatam but had been wanting to get the expanded version. He had a copy of Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, a very old edition. So, he purchased the Srimad Bhagavatam set. Just by seeing a man on the street. The speed reading drag queen. I was doing books in Manage Mall, and I saw a nice-looking lady with a low-cut top and long hair and makeup, but obviously she was a man. These types are usually quite fun, and we often take books. I stopped her by saying, "Can you read?" She immediately stopped, turned around, and stated dramatically, "I can speed read 120 words a minute." I showed her a Bhagavad Gita, which she liked. She said she would like a book to read on the train home, and she got it. All glories to the dragon. Another one from Julia. It was a cold day on Lambton Quay, but people were rushing by as always. Only one Krishna book had gone out on my part when I spotted a simple islander native trying to keep up with the business rush. I trapped him with an in-town or out-of-town line and landed into a tedious discussion about Samoa engineering and the Christian God. It wasn't going too successfully, especially when he couldn't get a book because he had not a moment to spare to read a book. I turned away from him, sulkily, and my eyes welled up with tears. He asked me something about a brochure, but I just ignored him. I was absorbed in my last resort tactic. After a while, I resumed my situation and turned towards him, saying, "I'm trying to serve God by distributing his glories, but no one will help me. No one wants to read about him." His heart was melted, and from then on, he was smiling. He pulled out $20, and he got a Bhagavad Gita and a Krishna book. I approached him midway, lady. I explained I was a monk and was doing a cultural promotion. When I mentioned the book talked about meditation and helpful stress, she exclaimed, "You must have known I was stressed out." She told me she worked at a women's refuge center helping women with stress. And now she was stressed out too. So she's on a holiday to relax. Her friend she was waiting for came over from a money machine, and I explained the situation to her as well. Her friend was very interested, so she went back to the money machine, got out $20, and bought the Bhagavad Gita for herself. Then I ask the first lady, what about one for yourself? You really need one too. She replied she had no money. Her friend said, I'll buy you one and you can pay me back tomorrow. So she went back to the money machine and got out another $20. So in this way, both persons got hurt. Another one from our show. Two middle-aged women were in a conversation at a seat on the footpath. I tried to spark some interest in them unsuccessfully, so I asked if they liked vegetarian food. One of them replied, no. But she said her son was a vegetarian. She pointed to the science of realization in my staff and said, he read that and he became a vegetarian. James. I was walking from house to house and met a middle-aged Christian lady. Another lady I met was looking for a friend but couldn't find her, and I turned up the Prabhupada's books. She said she would love to take several books, but we both didn't have a pen. She eventually found it in her car, but it didn't work. She wanted to write a check. My mind became very fluid, and I started to become a little agitated. She just joined the New Age spiritual group and began saying things like, well, maybe I'm not supposed to get this book after all. As she tried to get the pen to work, the tension mounted. I prayed to Krishna to engage this lady, and then the demigod in charge of things started to do his thing. So she took the books. Oh, glory to me, demigod. And it's time to bring a pen, you know. This one pen carries. I've been shop to shop, not distributing any books during the afternoon, and came to the library. This is the Wellington Library. And went in to do some brochures. While I was there, I wondered if they had any of Prabhupada's books. I got sent all around the library till I found Robin, who buys the philosophical books. They had only an old part 1 and 2, first canon. Right there and then, she got Nectar Devotion, several other books. Then I told her about Srimad Bhagavatam. She showed some interest. So I made an appointment to see her 2 days later. I arrived at the library, fully armed with heavy artillery. One Srimad Bhagavatam set, one knockout triple layer, triple peppermint cake made by Julia. Not even eventually, right? And backed by Srila Prabhupada, who wanted his books in the libraries and school. I gave her the write-up we have on Srimad Bhagavatam. She was impressed. It was the beginning of the budget year, so she said it was the right time. So, she got the Srimad Bhagavatam set for the Wellington Library. Not free. Another one from Terry. I stopped a young West Aucklander type of guy, black jeans, black top with a hellish picture on it, long hair and black boots. He showed a lot of interest in Bhagavad Gita and went off to get some money from a machine. In the meantime, I stopped a guy who also showed interest in the book. While we were still talking, the original guy came back with some money, and I told the guy, and I told the second guy, just see how wonderful these books are. People are lining up to get them. The second guy said he would really like to get Bhagavad Gita, but he didn't have any money on him. So the first guy in black said, I'll buy it for you. We both looked at him in amazement. He was serious. He really wanted to buy Bhagavad Gita for the second guy. So the first guy dressed in black handed me $40, and I gave each one of them a Bhagavad Gita. Then the second guy said to the first guy, follow me. So he took him to the money machine and got some money and paid him back. This is William doing a Srimad Bhagavatam on Chaitanya Charitamrita's deck on the street. One day in Palmerston North, Rufus and I were on the street. I was talking to a boy about easy journey to other planets, but he wasn't interested. Instead of giving a donation, he pointed out a man standing behind me. I turned around, and the man behind me asked to look at the book. He said he had all of them already. So I told him, now is the time for you to get the most amazing, gigantic Hare Krishna book. I gestured a large size in my arms. The Srimad Bhagavatam set, I explained. He said, really? Well, how much? And I told him all about the details. Before I knew it, he was asking for a book called the Chaitanya Charita. I asked him if he meant the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he smiled and he said, yes, I'll take that too. He gave his address, and later, Luke and I went to his house in Fielding. He asked us to watch his video he had made. It was really nice. A sound track played over the tape, a footage of Srila Prabhupada's books, artwork. When we pulled out the Bhagavatam, his eyes opened wide, and he became ecstatic upon touching it. I could only talk a little bit about it, as I have only read a little of it. But Luke made a beautiful presentation. When he had finished looking at the books, he jubilantly gave a deposit and explained that he wanted all of our literature. He said he would be keeping in touch, and that he would keep a separate bookshelf for all of Prabhupada's books. This one from Luke. On Dhoridhor on a sunny Sunday, I came across a middle-aged couple and a younger girl sitting on their porch, relaxing with refreshment. As I approached them, they asked me, what was I selling? And I introduced myself as a monk, and said I was trying to distribute philosophy, science, and cooking. My mind started nagging me by saying, these people are trying to get rid of me, but I tried to remember Lord Chaitanya. And at that moment, the younger girl said, she saw someone on Queen Street and was interested in Bhagavad Gita, but didn't have any money then. Then her father, who was sitting there, said, oh, Hare Krishna, tell me more. Come on up here on the balcony. He then offered me a glass of water. So I sat with them, and the mother and father were asking some awesome questions, and they were very interested and wanted to come to the Sunday feast that day. They also had a deeper understanding than most and were giving nice analogies that were intelligent according to their realizations. They even quoted Prabhupada. The mother fell in love with the Krishna book. The father fell in love with great vegetarian dishes, and their young daughter wanted the science of self-realization. They all gave nice donations and announced their revitalized enthusiasm and wanted to understand higher spiritual truth. Another one from William. Bhakti John and I were in Ponsonby doing door-to-door, and I went up to one house which had lots of hedges and bushes around. The owner was there in the garden, and I called him over. While he was on his way over, mosquitoes started to come out from the bushes beside me. By the time he reached me, they were numbering in what seemed to be like hundreds. I sold the man a hardback Gita and told him a little about it. He decided he would get it and went inside the house to get some money. He took about 10 minutes. When he finally returned, I had been bitten innumerable times all over my body, including on my freshly shaved head. After the army leader left me, it still wasn't over. He wanted to know more about the philosophy. Another 5 or so minutes of talking, he finally let me go, and I went away scratching like crazy. Then I started to think, what if this guy becomes a devotee? Then all the suffering from the other living entities, the maladies, would be well worth it. On the day of the Ratiyatra in Auckland, we were driving to Japan 2 hours ahead to distribute books before the parade. We grabbed some books and walked down the street. We didn't have much time, so we approached every available person on the way. The very first person I approached was a construction worker. We were on a street in town, a short distance from the starting point of the Ratiyatra. Either side of us were two huge new buildings under redevelopment. Amongst other construction workers, this guy was sitting on an electrical box. I greeted him saying, "Hi, I'm talking to all the intelligent construction workers today." He smiled and said, "You mustn't be talking to too many people then, are you?" He asked, "You from the Hare Krishnas?" It was obvious. He told me how he and his wife are really into the books and have read Prabhupada's Gita on and off for 10 to 12 years, and how they have been prasadam addicts for a long time. I had a book he hadn't seen before, and he went for it, and the Gita as well. I told him about the Ratiyatra festival that was ready to start any moment. Immediately, he pulls out a donation, but before he gives it to me, he reaches for his special two-way radio, and he said to it, "Hold it for a minute, Phil." He was looking upward, behind me. I turned around to see what he was talking to. And as I did, I saw this huge, 40-meter-high construction thing stop all of a sudden, dead in his tracks. I realized that this guy was talking to the crane operator who had stopped the crane so it would not interfere with the Ratiyatra procession. Then he gave me the donation and took his book. This is a letter, probably you know this person from the Navy. It's Justin. Yes. Writing on the outline. "I must be very impatient to you. The fact is that I feel as if a dam has burst, and the floodwaters must be directed in an appropriate course to the ocean. They cannot be held back." But looking back, I realize that my whole existence, purpose, and perspective has been a complete about-face. When you met me at the meeting on 18th of April, I had read to the end of Chapter 3 of Bhagavad Gita. I have had a thirst for its words ever since. I started reading it. I'm now up to Chapter 15. I'm looking forward to reading it a second time. I would also like to read Srimad Bhagavatam. I crave contact with other Krishna conscious persons. I'm looking forward to hearing back from everyone. And she goes on and on, a letter like this for 3 pages. This is, like Prabhupada said, there is no more effective way of spreading Krishna consciousness than distributing his books. This one from Avaitran. I approach the young lady seated at a table outside a cafe. We exchanged greetings and she was very friendly. She looked at my books and said, "Oh, you have Bhagavad Gita." I said, "How did you know about Bhagavad Gita? Have you studied it at the uni?" She said, "I've just been looking for a copy of it in the bookshops, but I couldn't find one." She was amazed that here I was at the cafe with a book she had been looking all over Auckland for. This is one from Adam, who used to live in Hamilton. He now lives in Auckland, a very nice congregational devotee. While shopping at the local vegetable store, I met a nice middle-aged lady behind the counter. She was wondering why I brought so many fresh fruits and vegetables, and I told her I was a Hare Krishna devotee. As soon as we started talking about Krishna consciousness, she became uplifted and so engrossed in the conversation that she forgot there was a long line of people waiting to be served at the counter. We talked for a few moments, and I showed her some of the books I had. I was getting a little restless, as one lady had been waiting behind me for some time. I suggested to the checkout lady that she serve the waiting customers. And as if asking permission, she said, "Oh, I'll serve her now, shall I?" She turned to serve the waiting customers, still with the books in her hand. Upon seeing the books, the waiting customers also became alive and said, "Oh, we've got some of those books. They're beautiful, and the food is wonderful." Well, that sealed it. A lady behind the counter bought a Bhagavad Gita and a great vegetarian dish. I left the shop realizing that Krishna is all attractive. So you see, it's not just a brahmachari service. Even in congregational householders working a regular job, they can also distribute Prabhupada's books. Another one from Juliet. That one. run from tape. We were distributing books shop to shop in central Wellington. My first stop was a dry cleaner shop. A lady there was interested in the books. She was looking through them all. What is this one about? And this one? I began recalling this morning's Bhagavatam class. We had a short talk about set distribution this morning. We were reading about distributing sets shop to shop. I began to think, this lady should get a whole pile of books since she liked them so much. But somehow I didn't have the intelligence to encourage her. So she ended up just taking the heart of her Bhagavad Gita. But as I was leaving, I thought, I'd like to distribute my whole stack of books somewhere, someone. A few shops later, I wandered down a deserted-looking arcade and found a run-down little hairdressing salon. Inside was a young woman with a bright pink, long hair and over-the-top movie-style makeup. I presented the books to her, and she explained how she was a born-again Christian for 4 years. She's left that, but she still prays to God, but isn't interested in any books. She has her own beliefs. But she suggested the lady she works with, who's next door, getting some lunch. I went and found her, and she asked me to wait in the salon with the books. She came back and started looking through all the books. She had a big stack, like about 20 books. She explained how she is into Taoism. She's Malaysian, and she's very interested in religion. She and her brother read very much on religion. They're interested in all traditions. So she said, how much? She looked at the stack of 20 books and said, how much for all these books? I almost fell over when she said that. My eyes were popping out of my head, probably. So she handed me a calculator to work it out. I told her, $150, is that okay? I asked feverishly. And she said she would pay it off over a few weeks, $50 a week. I explained how this had never happened to me before. And she said, I think I'm very lucky today. When I saw you with all these books, I knew it was very pure. Then she said, any new books, bring them to me. She was so clear and direct and sincere, I couldn't believe what was happening. I could feel that it wasn't me making all this happen. So I told her about Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. She said she would get all the other books after paying off these ones. I couldn't believe this was all happening. Inconceivable. We were talking together for quite a while. Julie, the Malaysian, the pink-haired girl, and myself. They were talking so intelligently, they could see how temporary material life is, how the only value is trying to find what is eternal. So did she get a set after all? She got a set the next day. I was on a set the next day. This one's like Charlene. Bradley came right up to me like we were friends from way back. So forward. Do I know you? I asked with a confused look on my face. He explained that he was a friend of Bhakta Lauren, and he concluded that Krishna is the ultimate. He said he used to be an impersonalist. He'd read the Gita, and so I was inspired to show him the Bhagavatam set. I was just outside Burger King, not far from the law, so it was convenient to show him the set. He liked the set, but for the time being wanted a Krishna book and beads. The next day, Juliet sold a set, so I was burning with desire to do likewise, and racked my brains wondering how I could ever do it. There was one set left at the loss. We were all desiring so much to do the last set, so I was feeling helpless. The next day I returned from a day of no sales to find Bradley sitting on the steps waiting for the loft to open. I had to cook that evening, so I put the heater on for him, gave him a drink, and while he chanted quietly with his eyes closed, I quietly slipped the first candle in front of him and sneaked off. The other lady devotees came back, and I was cooking in the back in such anxiety because I thought that they might sell him the last day. So I ran out and found him reading the canto, and then he began to glorify it. I said to him, you know, last night, Juliet did the second to the last set to an American lady, and it's my greatest fear that you might miss out on getting a set, so please reconsider. So he agreed. You also got a deluxe Gita because you only had soft cover. All doors are shut. One more. This is Juliet. This morning when I was chanting, I suddenly very much wanted to sell a Srimad Bhagavatam set that day. When we went door to door on the terrace, I was looking to meet someone who wanted to get a Srimad Bhagavatam set. Most people weren't home, and we got told to leave this weird block of apartments. Charlene and Kate were with me as well, and we didn't do any books. Soon it was time for the Sunday feast. By the end of the evening, I had completely forgotten about wanting to distribute a Srimad Bhagavatam set to someone. After a kirtan, a man named Sean, who had been coming every night for about 4 weeks and had done the whole Ayurveda course, came up to me and asked, "Have you saved me a deluxe Gita you said you would?" I told him, "Those Gitas are going fast, but they match a set." I told him that I had it, and he came back and looked at it. He asked me how much the set was, and I told him, not expecting that anyone would ever want to pay for a Bhagavatam set all at once. He asked for a pen and wrote out a check for the whole amount and took away a set of Srimad Bhagavatam and a deluxe Gita. Was I amazed? So these are our Lord Caitanya's pastimes in distributing love of God. We're not the doers. We just try to render some service to Lord Caitanya. You can see it can happen in New Zealand. Even people on the streets can buy Bhagavatam set. But we'll never know if we don't try. You don't have to be a big this or to think you're some kind of great that. All you have to do is make the effort. It's all that it takes. Anyone can do it. You just have to have an interest in the people to give them the highest nectar. You want to do the greatest benefit for them. You want to serve them. Anyone who gets Srimad Bhagavatam, they have the literary incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, certainly you should understand that it is very possible in New Zealand to distribute sets of Prabhupada's books. Even on the street, even people you just meet, you just don't know how Krishna's going to do it. So as we explained before, in case you don't know, New Zealand is famous throughout the world. For the past few months, it's been number two in the world for Bhagavatam sets. Only India is ahead of New Zealand. So this is Lord Caitanya's mercy. Anyone can swim in this ocean of love of God. So as Srimati Radharani's appearance day approaches, let us pray that we can increase our devotion because Srimati Radharani is the mother of devotion. Let's not bewilder ourselves, psyching ourselves out, "Oh, it's not possible. I can't do this, I can't do that." Everyone can render some kind of service to Krishna and beg for an increase, and that's the real nectar of Radhastami. Begging for an increase in devotional service in spite of all our excuses. All right. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.